It's been 10 years since college student Matthew Shepard was brutally murdered in the town of Laramie, Wyoming. How far have we come in creating laws to protect queer folks from violent crimes? On today's Feast of Fools, we got Wayne Besson, best known for Anything But Straight, a tell-all book unmasking the deceptive practices behind ex-gay groups. And Andy Thayer from the Gay Liberation Network.
Wayne will be speaking in Chicago this Saturday, September 27th, for the 10th annual Matthew Shepard March, protesting the murder of Matthew Shepard and all victims of hate violence. The rally starts at 8 p.m. on the corner of Roscoe and Halsted, followed by a march through the neighborhood.
The controversial induction of fundamentalist radio personality James Dobson into the Museum of Broadcast Communications has everybody up in arms.
Listen as we talk about the chilly $700 billion bailout.
Breast milk ice cream.
Celebrities in the glass closet.
And what happens if Obama wins the U.S. presidential election. Find out. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Gillian.
And this is Feast of Fools. Mary, did you know that the Feast of Fools is brought to you by generous support of fantastic listeners just like you?
We really can't do this show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffools.net. Make a donation, buy a t-shirt, get a mug.
You make this show possible.
Thank you.
Remember, you can subscribe to the Feast of Fools on the iTunes Music Store and never, ever miss a delicious show.
Just type Feast of Fools into the search bar and hit subscribe.
On today's Feast of Fools, we've got Andy Thayer from Gay Liberation Network. Welcome to the show, Andy.
Hey, Fausto. Hey, Mark.
And he's bringing his best buddy, Wayne Besson, the writer, activist, and public speaker, well known for his book, Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. How are you, Wayne?
Great. Glad to be here.
Now, you're the executive director of Truth Wins Out, an organization dedicated to exposing the ex-gay. Why can I not pronounce
ex-gay?
Ex-gay.
It's that
ex-gay
lift we all have.
Well, apparently they haven't got to you yet. They changed you.
You're an activist against Focus on the Family, James Dobson, truthwinsout.org. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here in one of my favorite cities, Chicago. And it's exciting. We're going to have the Matthew Shepard March.
So that's happening this Saturday.
This Saturday. And we're going to be speaking out against all these hate crimes 10 years after Matthew was murdered. It's such a important time to speak out, especially with all these elections going on right now, and everybody's paying attention to what all the changes that could happen out there. And one thing is
Before you move on forward, let me explain to the listeners what's happening. So Saturday, you're this featured speaker at the corner of Halsted and Roscoe for the Matthew Shepard Memorial March.
That's right there in the middle of Gayville, USA, Boys Town.
And so you're going to be the featured speaker, followed by an actual march through the community that's organized by GLN, Gay Liberation Network.
Yes, that's 8 p.m. at Roscoe and Halsted, Gay Central here in Chicago, and certainly hope others join us that night, hear more from Wayne and many others as well.
So Wayne, 10 years since Matthew Shepard was brutally murdered and the public outcry that came out as a result, what's changed?
A lot of attitudes have changed in America. I mean, we've seen a sea change, especially among young people who are now more supportive. We've seen marriage most recently in California. Remember, not too long ago, even civil unions were incredibly controversial in Vermont. And all of a sudden, we've had Massachusetts and the largest state in the country. And New York now is accepting those marriages. And our neighbors to the north and Canada have marriage. So it's not so... it's not so hypothetical anymore. It can't be looked at as a social experiment by conservatives. It's something that's happened. The sky didn't fall. The world didn't end. Their argument is done, basically. It didn't work what they said was going to happen. And we've made huge progress. Legally, we haven't. We've been in a long political winter. We've had the Gingrich Revolution. Then we've had George W. Bush for the last 8 years, and it's been a complete nightmare for America.
The Candace Gingrich Revolution, or the
well,
that hasn't happened yet.
That really hasn't happened.
That's the next great revolution.
Why would that? You know, the thing about Candace Gingrich even being a celebrity, like you should not get to be a celebrity if your cousin or uncle, or whatever, is a jerk.
Well, she's fighting for gay rights, though. Doesn't she have a job like with HRC or something like that?
She does.
Before that, with Coors.
I agreed with that until last week when I learned that I'm distantly related to the singer Peaches. Now I've changed my mind, and I kind of want to be famous by association.
You're distant related to Peaches, Fuck the Pain Away, Peaches?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
All right.
And I was wondering why, you know, I had a dirty mouth sometimes. Now I figured it out, because I think it's the Peaches connection.
So did Candace work with Lynn Cheney? Because they both worked for Coors, didn't they?
Candace, one of them did.
What's up with that Mary Cheney? She's sitting there.
Mary Cheney, that's what it is.
Get off your hands, Mary.
She disappears. She only shows up to make money. She's like, she's a lesbian whenever there's cash on the table. First, it's that she's in the closet. They give her money at Coors to go around the country with Mr. Leather. Mm-hmm. Then she's back in the closet. Then she's got a book that came out. And this is some, I mean, I sold more books, and she was on like every television network. She sold like two books. Even though she was on Larry King.
I think she got a huge advance, and the people were really mad because they didn't make their money back.
Oh, they didn't even make their money back. They didn't even pay for the printing. I mean, this was really, she sold like no books. She was on every show. It was a disaster. And she had no constituency.
You want to know a little interesting fact? Mm-hmm. That book actually was the worst selling book of the year it came out.
Really?
In all of American publishing.
Wow.
So it's like,
hey, congrats on that.
And the sad part is that includes blogs.
Yeah. So you're going to be speaking at the Matthew Shepard. What are you going to bring to the table? What are you going to, can you give us a sneak preview of what you're going to say?
No, I'm kidding.
Come on, man.
Some people
that are paying customers only.
They won't hear it. They'll be outside of the Chicago audience.
But we'll be there with our, you know, bringing in the flip camera. And
do I have to bring my own candle?
Bring your own if you want, but we'll have some.
Okay. I'm going to bring a virtual candle.
I'm going to bring a flashlight.
No,
I'm
a flashlight?
I'm going to go green. I'm going to imagine the candle. So what are you going to say?
I'm going to draw the connection between these hate crimes that are happening and this industry that is responsible for many of them. Many people think it's just serendipitous. It's something that just happens. It's just the way it is. And what's holding back a lot of progress and allowing people to think that our lives are less than, that we're moral monsters, that we're something other than, that allows people to justify and rationalize such hate crimes, is this multi-million-dollar right-wing industry led by Focus on the Family that pumps literally poison into the atmosphere. They're putting out the most horrible, heinous things about our lives, and then they throw up their hands when hate crimes happen and go, well, how did this occur? Well, if you spend millions of dollars telling Americans that we're going to destroy the earth, as James Dobson did with gay marriage, then what do you expect? If somebody who's a little bit off takes that to mean that they should fight back against someone who's going to destroy the earth, and I'm going to make these connections within the speech. And also, of course, we are trying to speak out on our protest on November 8th at the Radio Hall of Fame, where James Dobson is being honored, and which is amazing to us, because here's someone who has built his career in the backs of gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Americans, and he's being honored. This guy is being rewarded for such hatred.
Why is he being
Andy,
rewarded?
Well, you know the story here.
A popularity contest. They basically ran an internet poll, and when you have, 2,000-3,000 broadcasting stations that you pump out on daily, you can stuff the ballot, literally, and that's what his far-right Christian supporters did. In our terms, it's like giving an award to David Duke. You wouldn't give an award, a prestigious award, to someone who vilifies an entire community, because it's completely socially irresponsible. I mean, those who know a little bit of history of this country know that back in the 1930s, a man by the name of Father Coughlin was a radio preacher, was, if anything, as big as Dobson is today, and he was a neo-fascist. He was pushing for fascism in the United States. Now, if they had the internet back then, he would have won the award. Would that have been the responsible thing for a then Museum of Broadcast Communications to have done back then?
What is the museum saying? Are they saying, well, he got the votes, he's allowed in?
Exactly.
There's no qualification. There's no board that monitors.
I mean, it's like, you know, anybody with a radio program could qualify to get in.
Exactly.
Have they made any kind of statement?
They have. You have to be broadcasting for a certain number of years, and if you do that, you qualify. You can be on the ballot. And that's what they did. And they've had other people like Laura Schlesinger and other creeps like that down through the years. And we haven't thought anything of it. But this year, they changed it over to an internet voting system. No, she did not.
Because you worked against her. Was well, this part of the Stop Laura thing? Or?
She's sort of like, you know, doing the radio equivalent of the Anita Bryant, let's do the county fair gig because we can't get anything else. I mean, she is toast. She went from number two nationally behind Rush Limbaugh to toast coast to coast.
Toast coast to coast with Laura Schwarzenegger.
So why is the Chicago Museum of Broadcasting, or is that the correct name for it? The Museum of Broadcasting Communications, MBC, honoring James Dobson and sticking to their guns, realizing that he's such a controversial figure and it would actually tarnish the integrity of that museum.
Well, I think they're actually going for the money. They have been attempting to build...
Them?
Well... They
James
have
Dobson
got. They
is.
Have gotten. We actually sent letters out to a number of the foundations that historically have supported them. Say, hey, you know what you do with your own money is your own thing, but you should at least be aware of what this guy is doing with the institution that you have supported with thousands of dollars in the past. And a number of them, I believe, are genuinely irritated. They've stopped funding them, a number of them, because they've been attempting to build this edifice down on the near north side of the city for literally years and have not been following
a
new museum since they got booted out of the cultural center.
Oh, they're not in the cultural center
They're
anymore.
Not in the cultural center anymore.
Why
do you say booted?
Well, they... I don't know the specific circumstances. The point is they're not there.
Okay.
And if you were really in the process of really trying to move from one edifice to another, you wouldn't say, you know, cut your lease out on one place before you had some place to land. And for several years now, they have not had a place to land. They've got a very expensive edifice they've been trying to build on the near north side of the city.
Well, what they need to do is
But they
say
keep on running out of money. So,
Andy, keep your answers short. Okay, what they're doing is they're trying
this
to say, they're
going
to go green. Yes, please. So who is James Dobson, first of all? Because a lot of the listeners may not be aware of him.
James Dobson is the head of Focus on the Family. It's a huge organization.
Yeah.
It has a campus in Colorado Springs. They have $150 million a year of budget. They have 1,300 staff members, including a giant ex-gay ministry where they go around the country to different cities to have people try to pray away the gay.
I just realized that Focus on the Family means... F-O-F.
Well, there's a T in there, too, though.
Foff.
Well, no, but actually, they call themselves F-O-F.
Yeah. If you Google F-O-F, they come up. We do, too, but...
It's sort of like they're our sister organization.
And they
about
have their
to
own
say,
zip code.
A very ugly stepsister. But.
Have we just stepped into some lion's den here, Wayne?
It's the mirror universe.
And so James Dobson is sort of a very seminal figure in organizing an anti-marketing campaign against gay and lesbian people.
That's one of his ways he makes all those millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
He has used gay and lesbian people to make a fortune. And it's really, though, he's a true believer. This is someone who not only is a threat to our community, this is somebody who's a threat to the Constitution. This is someone who doesn't believe in the separation of church and state, that wants to see crazy right-wing judges that would change the very nature of America as we know it, whether it be freedom or the Constitution itself. I think everybody should stand up to this individual. It's a radical fringe organization that portrays itself as a grandfatherly, loving organization when it's anything but.
And I think that's really the point. He tries a soft sell. This is not a person comes out with sort of Fred Phelpsian, I hate gays, they'll go to hell, and fire and brimstone.
Right.
And so he sneaks up on people. And right here in the city of Chicago, we've got our news broadcasting station, WBBM-AM, broadcasts him. And he always comes on, as Wayne said, with this sort of grandfatherly sort of image. And does the soft sell against gays, against women. If people really knew what he was about, that he's against our equal employment rights, he's against our equal access to places of public accommodation, housing, etc., then they would, I think, react against him. And that's part of what our campaign in terms of the Museum of Broadcast Communications protest on November 8th is designed to expose.
Yeah. So you guys have a website, dumpdobson.com.
Yes, and .org. We got
.org. Well,
both.
And it's a great thing. If all the podcasters and bloggers and people who are part of the new media revolution actually spoke out against James Dobson and go to dumpdobson.com and sign the petition, post a link back to their blogs, I think that would speak volumes. So what we're going to do is we're going to put it up on the Chicago New Media Camp's LinkedIn website and into the Ning and get a lot of the new media people to speak out against the Museum of Broadcast Communication.
But he's already scheduled to get in,
yeah,
right?
And we're telling them to step back from this disaster, mm-hmm. this cliff that they're about to walk off of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cut their losses, move on, get somebody who's respectable. Mm-hmm. What we said was the Baseball Hall of Fame. Has not honored Pete Rose, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, mm-hmm. because he was gambling, because morality matters, and mm-hmm. his character counts.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying the same should be true for the Radio Hall of Fame, that character should count for something. It's not simply by being the most popular. I mean, mm-hmm. you can look throughout history, not just in this country, but others, some broadcasters have done horrible things. And just because they're popular, does that mean that we should reward them mm-hmm. for building a base of hatred? I mean, you can build a base of something that's good, or you can also have a very large audience for something that's evil. And I think Dobson qualifies for that. He hires people that
stop
go
for a
out
second.
There,
but Mark has a question for you.
Do you think that, but about him getting into this, do you think that they're giving money to the organization and that's why he's getting in?
I don't think so. I think that's what they aim to tap into. They have clearly burnt their bridges mm-hmm. with a lot of the traditional foundations because they haven't built this mm-hmm. damned museum that they've been planning on, and they've got sort of half built down on the near north side. And a number of them cut off their funding to them. They've told us.
So
they
do
cut
you think
off
this
the
is
funding.
Kind of a publicity stunt for them?
Let's go for another source of funding. Let's tap into right wing networks. Let's hope that the sort of money that supports Dobson will start flowing to the mm-hmm. Museum of Broadcast okay. Communications. Right. It's very cynical.
Well, so there's a lot of money there.
Is this, is this museum relevant anymore? I mean, the vast majority of Americans are sort of leaving broadcast communications and going to online communications, or traditional media versus new media. And as this change happens, a museum that is based only on broadcasting, mm-hmm. which is sending a signal through the airwaves, and not just call it the Museum of Communications, and including new media into its scope, may just become a dinosaur. So it's sort of like the Museum of Telegraphs, yes. or, you know, operators or something like that.
But there's a little museum for every kind of niche, no matter what it is. I mean, there's a stamp museum, there's a train museum, there's all sorts of stuff.
Well, who's to say they won't adjust in a couple of years and add online communications?
Exactly. They're not completely stupid. Mm-hmm. I mean, they may see that as a new niche to move into. Certainly.
Have they made a statement about this person? Have they said, we're allowing him in because of the votes? Have they made any kind of, or are they just...
A formal
where is
statement.
This? Do they have a formal statement on this?
Well, I understand that they have. I mean, they've responded to various news media organizations saying he got the votes and this is the way it's going to be. So be it. We may have more on that, but that's my understanding.
Yeah, they've hid behind this and acted like this was a really legitimate vote mm-hmm. rather than a stacking the deck of a right-wing organization with 3,000 radio stations. Okay. I mean, even Howard Stern didn't even campaign for it. He said the whole process of electing someone to the Hall of Fame was ridiculous. Why should he have to campaign to be in a Hall of Fame? It should be an honor, not mm-hmm. a campaign.
Right. It should be, Howard Stern, of course, why wouldn't he be in it? You know what I mean? He's probably
well,
the most,
Howard Stern
the most
suspended
famous,
his campaign you know? Because of the economic crisis. You gotta give him that, too.
Well, I think he would know more than McCain.
So what do you guys, what's your thoughts on McCain suspending his political campaign temporarily because of the economic crisis and refusing to debate with Obama?
He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. McCain, if you listen to him on economics, he admitted he doesn't understand the issue. And now he's not ready to take off his training wheels and go head to head with Obama while we're in this crisis. So he's running and hiding. It's an absolute joke. It's a ploy. And I think it's transparent to anybody with more than three brain cells.
Well, neither of them have been participating in the negotiations going on this past week over how to basically rob us of $700 billion. And so the whole idea that either of them are going to sort of swoop in on their white horse and solve anything by a meeting with George W., I mean, this is a man who doesn't have two brain cells put together, and yet they were having a powwow at the White House today. And we're supposed to believe that this is going to solve America's economic crisis? I mean, give me a break.
Well, the Republicans have really gone for this photo op thing, especially with like Palin going to the UN and stuff like that. They're not reporting news. They realize that people see things, and it's like in their mind. And if they see them doing this, then they put whatever it is that they want to think is happening on that photo.
Well,
you know?
The good thing is the CNN basically said, look, if you only allow us to have a photo op, we're not covering it. And that's the way that they actually forced Palin to actually have a microphone in front of her.
Did she actually speak?
I understand they had a very tight press pool, but they were planning on just having photographic journalists, period. And they forced
them
back down on that.
CNN actually got all their cameras and all their equipment and left the building.
Well, I'm excited to see whether McCain shows up or not at this thing. The funny thing about the debates on Friday, which is funny, too, is because McCain has always been pressuring Obama, saying, I want to have a town hall with him, and he won't have a town hall. And Obama's like, well, if he doesn't show up for the debate, I'm going to have a town hall
without him.
You know, the joke about the $700 billion is you can do several billion-dollar lotteries in all 50 states, and that would actually probably raise more revenue for the chance to win $1 billion in all 50 states for the budget than anything they're doing. I mean, they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
So this just strikes me, my instinct, as this money grab. It's almost like as the Republican Party and the George W. Bush family is cashing in their chips and stealing as much as they can. Like literally,
before they're out,
like a rock star unbolting the TV set up from the hotel room before they leave, check out of the hotel room. That's what it strikes me.
Or like
as.
The Clintons when they left the White House, they took everything.
Did they?
They took some stuff. Yeah,
they took stuff.
They,
you know? they took
the paint off of it. It wasn't even white.
Well, I mean, it seems like the Senate committees and the state representatives don't seem to be very excited about this offer. This. Bailout that's happening.
Well, it's putting so much power into one person who is, by the way, unelected, into the Treasury Secretary's hand, and they're saying, oh, I'm going to write a $700 billion blank check, and I'm not going to get any patronage out of it for myself or my buddies. I mean, I think the really amusing thing about it, so you're talking about these big free marketeers who have been pushing free market so-called solutions on the rest of the world, and here we have the single biggest government, socialism for the rich, if you will, in history. And it's coming from these free marketeer, Milton Friedman economist types who've been telling the rest of us, oh, government, big government is bad, and, don't throw money at the solution for public education
But they weren't they right? Because they were able to collapse this economy, and then they're getting paid for it. So, I mean, they're kind of smart in a way, right?
It's a great scam.
It's a
really great scam. You got to hand it to them.
Yeah. Well, we've had gay Republicans on the show arguing that the reason that they're for the Republican Party and that they're sort of siding with their political and economic policies is because they disagree with the concepts of socialism. But the irony here is that it's this is a socialist tactic for the government to write a $700 billion check to bail out these wealthy people.
Well,
if it was a welfare model,
they will spin it.
Well, look back to the Reagan Revolution when they were saying, balance the budget and so forth. Actually, the budget deficit ballooned thanks to all the military spending. We were seeing the same thing right now, record budget deficits, even before this was going on, spending billions of dollars on these wars. They just wrote a check for $176 billion at the end of June for the two wars, and now we got $700 on top of that.
Andy, are you saying that the U.S. government is a shopaholic?
It seems more like a shoplifter the way it's been going. I mean, every way it's been run. And, I mean, the type of money, I mean, this whole railroading through the $700 billion, my dad told me, don't ever trust anybody if they're talking too fast, they can't describe what they do for a living in less than one sentence, and if they're trying to rush you into signing something, and this government bailout's doing all three.
Why is it such a rush, though, too? They say that the economy will collapse if they don't get it done soon, but it's like, come on, give it some time.
They genuinely are scared because they've been selling, basically been writing bad checks. Mm-hmm. Right around the whole system, and it's come home to roost. I think they genuinely are scared. I don't think that's BS, they want the rest of us to pay for it.
A couple days they can hold off. I mean, so we can actually look and read the thing before we sit there and mortgage the entire economy worse than it's already happened. The people who have screwed this up in the first place are telling us to trust them, and I don't. I don't think many people should, and I think because of that, a couple extra days, we're not talking about weeks or months, but maybe 3 or 4 days to actually get a grip on this and maybe improve this bill.
And
and this would be a smart thing to do if we're going to do this at all.
And where do they come up with this magic 700 billion? You know,
well, that's the whole point.
Seven is a lucky number, you know? And two zeros is twice as lucky.
And why all that at once? I mean, what happens when you give them that? Are they going to come back for more? Just, I don't know. I'm scared.
So this Friday, Barack Obama might be standing there at the podium. What do you guys thought? You think he's going to be there alone, or McCain will show up at the last minute and be like, well, all right, and sort of be in a bad mood the entire time, and then blame the fact that he wasn't good at the debate because
he was busy working on
his mind was someplace else.
He was saving
else.
Us.
Saving
what
do
you guys
think?
He was busy saving us.
Do you think he'll show up?
I think he will. I think this was one too many stunts for his campaign. I mean, Palin was a stunt. We've seen other stunts out of it. I mean, the guy was, his polls were beginning to tank. It was very interesting. Same thing you saw in terms of Denver, the potential bump that the Dems were going to get out of the MAGA rally at the end of Denver. And mind you, I'm not, you know, supporting either major candidate, but
you're not.
I am not. But the point is that, you know, Obama was set to have a huge bump out of the Dem convention. They very craftily announced the Palin thing the Friday before Labor Day, which meant that rather than people buzzing about the Obama, you know, coming out party in Denver through the course of the 3-day weekend, instead they switched the subject to Palin, and that was very, very crafty.
Well, because they were actually going to do it the day of Obama going to accept the nomination.
This is the first time you've ever had VP announcements before you actually had the conventions.
Right, they usually were at the convention, so it's interesting. I loved watching seeing David Letterman the other night, and he was talking about, he was just praising John McCain, saying he's wonderful, you know, he's a war hero, and I'm just saying, oh, David, come on. He was just, and so, then he really started to lay in, because talking about McCain suspending the campaign because of the financial crisis, and he's just like, well, why wouldn't you have your vice president come out and campaign for you? Why isn't she out there? What's going on? Why don't you see her? She's not doing anything. She's not saying anything.
Well, they put Sarah Palin in an oxygen chamber of information.
Is that what it is?
I think that's what they're doing to her. It's sort of like, do you ever see the movie The Fifth Element? When they build the perfect woman out of that one cell.
Little chromosome thing.
The chromosome thing. The and it's sort of like chromosome. What Sarah Palin is. It's like the Terminator of politics. She has no content or information. It's what you program into her, and that's what they're doing right
now. Well, she'll probably tell us all to go hunt for her own moose and make moose stew, and then we could save money. That's probably her economic plan.
It works during economic crisis.
We don't have moose here in Chicago. We've got cougars, but no moose.
Okay, so I really like your blog, Wayne, and you have this wonderful entry this week. What if we win? That sort of visualizing a positive, because we're painting such a dark and negative picture here, and it's like gloom and doom, and, you know, Andy, you're not even supporting Obama. I mean, you don't think that Obama would actually, he's not your candidate of choice.
No, I mean, I don't think that's actually the way that change is ever made. I mean, look at American history. Look at the history of our own movement. The way that change has always been made has been by people getting out on the streets and demanding it. We've had actually some of the most sweeping liberal, shall we say, change under, you know, utter creeps like Richard Milhouse Nixon. And we've actually had some of our biggest defeats under alleged liberals when those liberals were not having any pressure put on them by the grassroots. And that's precisely what we're seeing with Obama right now.
Are you saying take charge of your own destiny and don't rely on a political leader to give it to
you? Yes, it's a very novel concept.
You know who said that last time in public?
Who?
Bill Clinton.
But remember what happened.
He said, you do not wait for a favorable political climate to take charge of your destiny.
But remember what the leaders of our own community were saying during the early years of the Clinton administration, saying, leave it to us. We finally got someone in power who's on our side. Don't put any pressure on him. You're just joining the right wing. Well, what we got out of that was, of course, don't ask, don't tell, just months after he got in. So and then Defense of Marriage Act and any number of things that will hit
our community. So as soon as Obama gets in, that's when the pressure should start?
The pressure needs to begin now.
Now.
And yet our national organizations are not saying, look, it's not enough to say civil unions or whatever. That separate but equal is not good enough. There's some 1,300 rights that come with equal marriage rights. And marriage rights is just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, we've got a situation situation where LGBT youth are facing violence in our schools, and yet what are we getting in our schools? We're getting abstinence-only education. We're getting now Obama talking about, you know, melding church and state in terms of faith-based funding. Mm-hmm. And yet, where is our community outrage about this? I mean, are we writing just another blank check the way that our community did in the early years of the Clinton administration? We saw what that led to. It actually paved the way.
So when do we march, Andy? When do we march?
We march this Saturday, 8 p.m., Halston Roscoe.
No, when do we march on Washington?
No, well, that needs to happen, too.
But when you made a great point on your blog, what if we win? What happens if gay marriage Proposition 8 is on the table in California, and certainly the future of our judicial system is here at stake with Obama may or may not be coming elected. What happens if we win?
Well, first I agree with Andy on we have to keep the pressure up in a lot of ways, and we can't just give a pass to our allies. But I disagree with the fact that about supporting Obama. I fervently support Obama. Not that he's perfect. He's let us down on some things. But the bottom line is we've got a Supreme Court that can be stacked with right-wingers that can be an absolute nightmare for this country. I think there's a huge difference if between McCain and Obama. A lot of people didn't think so with Nader, and they said, oh, it's not that big of a deal. There's no difference between Bush and Gore. Well, there was. Bush has run our country into the ground. There is a huge difference. Yeah. I think if we get Obama as the president and we have a Democratic Congress, we should pass ENDA. And we should pass hate crime legislation. And I think at some point within the next few years, there'll probably be at least a debate, possibly a repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Again, we could be let down, and we have to keep the pressure to make sure that doesn't happen. The Supreme Court scares the heck out of me. But let's say we wake up, we have a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president, and we win all three marriage amendments in California, Florida, Arizona, or take two out of the three, taking all the steam out of the anti-marriage amendment, I think the world changes. At the very least, we're not going to have Republicans in the White House or in Congress trying to push this whole marriage amendment stuff at the federal level, and there's not going to be this overt gay bashing. There is the possibility, but we still have to stay alert because there is the possibility, politicians being politicians, that they're not going to follow through on their promises. And if we have a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president and they don't do these things, I think we have to seriously look at our allegiance to the Democratic Party if they don't follow through on these things. But I just think the stakes are too great right now to have a McCain and God forbid, a Palin. And that's what really scares me in office.
Because that guy could drop dead tomorrow.
He looks, he's like 500 years old.
But she's really cute, though. You have to admit, like, you know, I as much as I, in my heart, I hate her, I look at her and I go,
that picture of her in the bikini with the rifle and the red, white, and blue thing is doctored.
It is?
Yes,
I thought it wasn't.
And that's why Tina Fey said.
Oh, they have lots of beaches. Yeah.
My cat's cute, but I don't want him in the White House. I
mean, it is sort of like a Care Bear with a gun in its hand, you know?
I think it's important, and just going back to a few things that Wayne said. I mean, Wayne, you talk about the packing of the court. Well, hello. What were the two courts packed with that gave us Massachusetts and California marriage equality? They were packed with Republicans. In fact, it was a California chief justice who gave us who actually wrote the decision that is so groundbreaking. Now, that isn't to say that that only comes out of Republicans, but I think it's important to note when our Democratic friends say, look, we got to do this in order to get things out of the courts. Look what the courts have given us so far. The other thing is, just to think, wind back the clock back to 1992, we did have a Democratic president. We did have a Democratic president. We had two Democratic houses of Congress. And because all the pressure was coming from the right wing, Clinton galloped to the right and eventually basically was giving in to all the right wing arguments that paved the way for the Republican Revolution and gave us George W. at the end of the day.
So is it the end of the world if a Republican does become president?
It is not the end of the world. The point is that whoever is in office, we have to fight. Well, That's only the way that rights have ever been won.
But I would make the point, you're talking, those are old-style Republicans from liberal states. Right now, you're not going to see a surprise like a suitor in the Supreme Court because they're vetted by the Federalist Society, a right-wing legal operation right now. You're not going to get those surprises. You're going to get somebody more like an Alito or a Roberts. The surprises of yesteryear in the Republican Party aren't going to happen, so you're going to get more Scalia types in there. Second point taken about Clinton, he certainly did let us down. And I think that Obama could do the same thing. We've seen some backtracking, but as of right now, there is a... There is no doubt that with all his backtracking, he is still superior to McCain. That doesn't support anything good. And Palin, not just on the gay rights issue, on simple competence and the simple ability to handle foreign relations. I mean, we talked earlier about her being in this bubble. She's not prepared to be president. And I mean, she's whole thing about, oh, we'll fight Russia, for example, scares the heck out of me.
But you know what? One thing, speaking in the defense of Obama, one thing he represents to me is a level of intelligence and transparency and teamwork that is something that I personally aspire to as an individual. And for me, I want a leader is somebody who inspires me and makes me go, you know, I wish I was more like this person.
Right, because you're saying like Obama is somebody who's like, I want to work with you. Together we can accomplish these things. Whereas McCain's just like, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that.
McCain speaks in metaphors and speaks in language that is not based in reality. Whereas Obama says, well, this is how this happened. This is how we can get out of it. Let's talk about it and let's come up to a solution. I just don't feel like Obama has like hidden agendas like McCain does or the Bush family does. Oh, but and that's what I like about
him. He's also the same person who said that because of his constitutional beliefs, he thinks that gay people shouldn't allow to be his constitutional beliefs. Wish it were the constitutional beliefs. Because of his Christian beliefs. He believes that gays and lesbians should be allowed to be married. That's what he said.
Pandering, right?
It's complete pandering.
You don't think he really believes it, do you?
I think both of them will believe whatever the polls tell them to believe.
Okay.
And that's really the problem with the whole profession of politicians. And that's why you never see change coming from
you
politicians.
You have to sympathize with the situation. Is this guy feels that right now it's not politically expedient to be 100% behind gay marriage. And when I hear him talking, I don't hear somebody who's saying, you know, Jesus told me that gays are the villains. He says, right now, I just don't think that this is something that is that important.
The point is that I think the profession of being a politician is in itself a dishonorable profession. And it's like saying, but, you know, what if we had an honest politician? It's like saying, what if we had an honest thief?
That's not the way that changes.
You're right with Shirley Phelps
There are honest politicians. They're called losers in the election.
And that's why you don't look for change from those people.
The situation with Obama, though, is that he's not as a person as about honesty is that he's about being transparent. He's explaining, this is why I feel this
bill,
way.
FISA bill, NAFTA, I mean, he's a lot smarter than any other jokers out there.
But you're saying that he's like crafty or devious and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, Bill important. Clinton was very... But I don't think that whoever's president of the United States is going to be fundamentally on our side, because who they have to sell themselves to in order to get to that position, the millions of dollars, the kind of campaign contributions they have to gather from all the jokers who are now trying to screw us for the $700 billion, you don't become a serious presidential candidate in this country without fundamentally selling your soul.
It's about who you owe, though. And if Obama's there, he's not going to owe the religious right. Mm-hmm. If McCain is in there, he's going to owe, and Palin, they're going to owe the religious right, and that's where the favors are going to be, and that's a big problem. Is that a great place for change? No, but it's about degrees of change, and there's a huge difference between the two parties. And I think people should vote... you know, for Obama, and for that. Plus, it would be great just to have a smart person in there again for no other reason. Somebody, when they're looking at foreign leaders, like, and they're at a big table, you're not going, oh, God, we're going to get the short end of this deal.
I know. Well, in defense of Andy's point of view is, Obama is, of all the political candidates, Democrat or Republican, he's the one that gets the most money from the health insurance lobbyists.
Watch out.
So watch out, you know, it's like, who's he answering to? At the same time, I just don't strike, he doesn't strike me as an individual who's going to say, well, this is why, you know, when I hear him talking about health insurance or things
you're
that
in love with him, admit it.
Well, no, it's a situation
he
explains.
He explains
why he's mm-hmm. thinking the way he does, and he's very. It's not like he's masking.
He's articulate.
But
he's
I think articulate. Fausto, we need to get away from the what might be termed the progressive version of who would you rather have a beer with in terms of
I don't
want to
have
you,
a beer with him. I don't want to. I don't even want to meet
him.
The
whole point is him. The whole point should be down to not who do you like for president. But how is change made? How is human rights progress made? That is the question that people got to ask themselves and got to ask themselves if putting millions upon millions of dollars into this presidential campaign is more worthwhile than putting things into dumpdobson.com or any number of other truly grassroots movements. I mean, you look at how African Americans won the right to vote. They didn't vote to win the right to vote. They did things like the 63 March on Washington, which was put forward as a march that would be against JFK, would be against the White House, unless JFK and the White House got with a program. It was the threat against an allegedly left-wing
politician.
So maybe
we do want Republicans to get into office.
No, that was against JFK. And it would have been against JFK if he had not gotten with a program. Same with Lyndon Baines Johnson. What turned a Dixiecrat into someone who pushed some of the most far-reaching civil rights legislation this country's ever seen? It was because there was a mass movement in the streets that said, look, we're not going to just follow you because you got a D next to your name.
Have we become lazy?
Absolutely.
So you think that the gays are, if we had taken to the streets, if we've marched in Washington, if we were protesting, if we were out there, we'd have more rights.
It's not enough to just march on Washington. It's not enough to just rally. You got to rally with a demand. You got to say, we're going to burn you if you don't turn us around. And that's the problem
and
with
by
most.
Burn, you mean like.
We are going to raise hell. We are going to raise hell if you don't do the right thing.
Necessary. Mm-hmm. Andy Thayer. So, Wayne, weigh in on this and we got to move on.
Well, I would agree with everything he says from an activist perspective, mm-hmm. but I also think this nation cannot afford a McCain presidency. After 8 years of George Bush, we are going to sink. And we're going to become more like a developing nation. If you look at some of the other countries, what they've achieved, everything from science to infrastructure, and you look at how our country is falling, another 4 to 8 years, particularly if Palin's in there, mm-hmm. I think we're in deep, deep trouble.
Okay, so the ex-gay website, based on the title of your book, Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth, Wayne, Why is this like ex-gay group looking to you for inspiration?
Well, I use the term the formers because I said they don't ever find anybody who has a normal background, a white picket fence who said, mm-hmm. I need the change. Almost everybody they get from their leadership is somebody who was a former prostitute, a former drug addict, and blamed all their poor choices in life for their sexual orientation instead of taking personal responsibility. And this group used that term, the formers, former prostitute, as the formers, I called them, to label their website. And I know, you know, they think it's funny. I don't think it's funny when you exploit people who are down their luck. You scrape them with a spatula out of the gutter, and you tell them that we're going to clean you up and love you as long as you sexually engineer yourself to become straight, which doesn't even work, by the way. I think it's very cruel. I think this is very conditional love. And can cause more damage in the long run. The person gets cleaned up in some cases, and then, of course, the support system always is threatening to collapse around them if they're themselves.
So the thing is, if I get this right, so the person is struggling with something else, and being gay is not their primary problem, and they come to these people for some kind of help, and then they usher them into a program and rehabilitate them and tell them they're not gay anymore.
Sure, they're telling them that the reason they are smoking that crack or taking that meth and the reason they can't have a relationship that works is because they're gay and because it's inherently something mm-hmm. that goes with homosexuality. And many of these people grew up in the first place in religious households, so there's always this lingering internal homophobia mm-hmm. and sense of guilt that's exploited when they're down on their luck. And they've made a mess of their lives. And instead of getting real help from real psychologists and mm-hmm. real places that can integrate who they are with cleaning themselves sure. up, they go to these ministries that are like fake friends.
Now, how many people actually go to these types of ministries? You know, is this like one or two people a week, or is it like hundreds or thousands of people?
I think I think thousands enter. Most leave very quickly. A few stay. The problem isn't really, it's not ever about people going to these ministries. Mm-hmm. There are the people who are damaged severely by them that we mm-hmm. help all the time. But this is about politics. James Dobson, Focus on the Family, and these other groups aren't trying to change anybody. They're trying to change laws to keep discrimination alive. Around 1998, they looked at the polls and said, God, if we keep bashing gays and fire and brimstone, it's not going to work with the public. So let's just have this sweeter, kinder, Matthew gentler Shepard. Sugarcoat this homophobia and call it Love One Out. And say it's about love. And this is what the whole ex-gay industry is about.
Why are they so threatened by gay sex?
Well, I think that they have much broader goals. They want to replace the Constitution with the Old Testament. They're very, these are severe right-wing people that don't see America the same way we do. They don't believe in separation of church and state, and they believe gay people are getting in the way of their ultimate goal. It's a big obstacle. A nation that is progressive enough to support GLBT equality isn't going to be a nation that has an Old Testament law. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this is
about. So it's their love of God and Jesus?
Yeah, I think that some of them are con artists for the money. Others are very sincere. Mm-hmm. I think Dobson's sincere.
Well, and I think you know, that raises a very important point, is that these people have got a very long agenda. And it's just confined to LGBT people. I mean, these are the same people who are very much against women's rights, young girls' rights in terms of being able to control their sexuality, you know, abortion rights and so forth. But also, they support a very, very lunatic, aggressive foreign policy. Really, they're called millennialists, I believe, or dominionists, I should say.
And
they're
very dominionists.
Well, dominionists.
I've never heard that before.
Google it. Google it. It's a very scary far-right ideology.
Where
dominionism. Well, basically, they want to bring on Armageddon. And if that means stoking things in the Middle East, if that means...
Because they want the end of the world so that they can go live with Jesus.
They'll have the rapture.
And Sarah Palin's church is very much steeped in this reconstructionism, or rather dominionism and rapture and, mm-hmm. and all that. And that's what scares me, that here we're putting the biggest military in the hands of somebody who has some very outrageous beliefs.
So our guests today have been Wayne Besson and Andy Thayer. Wayne speaking this Saturday at the Matthew Shepard Memorial March, protesting the 10th anniversary of the murder of the 21-year-old Matthew Shepard, who was brutally beaten and tied up to a fence post
yeah,
in Laramie, Wyoming, and left to die. So it starts at 8 p.m., and the rally is at the corner of Halsted and Roscoe in Chicago, followed by a march through the community. We'll be there. Will you? And let's get some your thoughts on some of these sort of odd news items. A bumper sticker in Australia said, what did it say? It said, the only rights gay have is the right to die, which is very Kevorkian, I think. You know, so it's sort of like, right, because a lot of the conservative Christians usually are saying that, no, you got to keep prolong life as much as possible. And so this is kind
but
of like
the Bible
this
says kill gays.
Kills gays. Mm-hmm. And so this guy put the bumper sticker on his car in Australia, mm-hmm. and the law is forcing him to remove the bumper sticker off of his car and fining him. And so people are saying, well, he does have a right to express themselves, but the law is saying that he doesn't have the right to incite violence.
Well, it's very interesting. You could put any number of Leviticus quotes mm-hmm. on a bumper sticker that call for, you know, the wages of sin are surely death and so forth. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty scary. If people really want to put themselves forth as biblical literalists,
you could own
for
a
one
Canadian.
Thing, they're selective literalists, but the kind of literalism that they want are the sort of what these dominionists are for in terms of kill the gays.
I give them credit for getting it all on a bumper sticker anytime when it comes to that. And it certainly didn't mean
it was a big bumper sticker.
No, I mean, I think people should have the right to say whatever they want. And it's true. If you really look at what their beliefs say, and if it is literal, it's very, very violent. And, you know, I in some ways, when people show themselves to be nuts in this fashion, I think it's sometimes helpful because it shows these people are saying what a lot of other people are really thinking, and it gets it out there.
But why do gay people have the ability to be, you know, hated upon and so public? If I put a bumper sticker on my car that was hateful against any other minority, my car would be beaten up and like the windows would be broken. But gay people, if I put like no to gays or something like that, nobody says anything and everyone's like,
it's
oh,
like
well.
We just bend over and take it.
Well, our community has been a doormat for ever since, you know, we started the movement, unfortunately.
So we've
got a long way.
Andy?
No, my point is, I mean, we faced these fascist anti-gay clowns down on Diversity Street during the Gay Pride Parade each year. And most people just say, oh, well, I'm just going to ignore them and it'll go away. Well, sorry, they've been there for many years. But I think if during the city's largest African-American parade, some people showed up in white sheets, what would be the reaction?
They wouldn't leave alive.
Well, but I think we bring a lot of it on ourselves. And this is where I go back to, yes, this presidential campaign, once again, we still don't have candidates who are basically in favor of simple legal equality, not just in the presidential race, but any number of other races. Why do we keep on selling ourselves short? I mean, there's a lot of things that we want beyond legal equality, but if we make ourselves such damned doormats, if our national organizations allow ourselves to be doormats, then what do we expect?
Why are we doormats? Because we're ashamed of
what
we do.
Why do we sell ourselves short?
We will support candidates who aren't even favor of our simple legal equality, let alone the any number of other things.
But as a description of the behavior, what is the cause? Why do you think
it's internalized homophobia? It certainly is.
It's a feeling that you somehow deep inside really are wrong and bad.
But also, it's because I think a lot of our leaders have basically tied their apron strings to the Democratic Party, and rather than making any demands of that party, the way that historically other communities have, we've allowed ourselves just to be led along. I mean, when the Democrats tell HRC to jump, they ask how high. I mean, how many times have we seen? They did it on ENDA. They did it, you know, during the DNC in 2004 in terms of having Margaret Cho perform. Any number of other instances, whereas our community should have been saying, look, we've got demands that are independent of the party needs of the Democrats or Republicans or whomever, and we're going to put our civil rights first and party interests second. That's what MLK did. That's what people don't talk about in terms of that movement, and we need to get back to that.
I'm very concerned internationally because we talk about being passive in a way. Internationally, I mean, there are countries that put us to death if we reveal ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, Saudi Arabia, Iran, the Iranian president just spoke out on this issue.
They just sentenced a guy to death this week.
It kind of breaks my heart that we haven't created sort of an Israel of some type where people can defect to and save their lives. And there were just countless horrors that are taking place around the world, yet we haven't created, and I'm not sure how you would go about this, but I mean, look, Manhattan's not very big. It's only, 10 miles mm-hmm. wide. We should have something like that for gay refugees that are just left there. No other group would leave their own people to get beaten and die across
the world. But you know, part of the problem is if we started a gay Israel, the gay guys sort of fetishize having sex with straight men. That's sort of the problem lies. What? Is that we're attracted?
Is that internalized homophobia?
We're sexually and romantically attracted to people who don't want to have sex with us. You know,
we're attracted to politicians who don't want to. Well,
we get pleasure by being rejected. Mm. You know.
I don't know about
that. I don't know about that.
It's not the pleasure.
I just don't
think
these people, they don't know. How would they go about getting to where they need to go, you know?
Well, so anyways, moving on here. PETA, the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, is demanding this week that Ben & Jerry's, the liberal Vermont ice cream maker that donates a significant portion of their proceeds to progressive charities.
And a significant portion of my fat cells.
is asking them to make their ice cream from human milk in response to a Swiss restaurant owner who has announced this week he'll begin purchasing breast milk from nursing mothers and substituting breast milk for 3/4 of the food that he serves.
Oh, that's like cannibalism.
What do you guys think about it? I mean, you know, you're activists.
Oh, I am so gay. The thought of
drinking
mommy's milk.
I might have
just
it, like,
make me. I might even
I
more so.
I don't think I'd have like a cup of it, but I might try it in coffee or like butter, maybe.
That's what like a lot of because some women actually.
But
have
there
a
is the lesbian market
milk.
To think of here.
Do you think lesbians get off on breast milk? I don't know. My friend Kathy, she used to tell me after she had her baby, she'd be out drinking in the bar, and like it was when she was done breastfeeding, but her breast was still producing milk, so she'd go into the bathroom, you know, finish her beer, go into the bathroom, squeeze her titty out into the sink, and then just go back to drinking.
You should get her to speak at the Matthew Shepherd
She could
March.
Be your barista.
You know?
Your barista.
And so we on the website.
Where are you getting that? Sorry.
Yeah, just pretend like it didn't happen.
Okay. That was
all right,
weird.
We had an equipment malfunction.
It was like a stereo thing going back and forth. I'm like, what?
So Queen Latifah, this week we had Johnny Dangerous on the show, mm-hmm. and we were talking about how it seems just like everybody in Hollywood, I think in sort of a panic that Obama may not become president. I don't know why it's happening, mm-hmm. but all of a sudden, Clay Aiken's on the cover of People magazine. Lindsay Lohan's going on talk radios, confirming the nature of her relationship to her girlfriend. And I said that Queen Latifah
was out.
And I remember us actually covering it. Well, what's happening is that Queen Latifah, like a lot of celebrities, is sort of in the glass closet. Like they don't say that they're, you know, having sex with this person, but they call them, you know, they're very close friend/personal trainer.
Well, she said it was her personal trainer, right? The woman you say she's having a relationship with.
And then Queen Latifah, you know, if that's her personal trainer, she should get her fired. That's all I gotta say. You know what I'm saying? She's not doing a very good job.
You mean Clay Aiken's gay? I never would have guessed that one.
Oh,
so your thoughts, Wayne, Clay Aiken's on the cover of People magazine with his baby boy saying he's gay now.
I thought when he was, I have to confession to make, when he was doing the American Idol thing, I thought he was kind of hot, especially with the geeky look he had. And everyone, when I say that, people think I'm crazy.
I think you're a little bit crazy. But no, I can kind of see it. He has a little bit of a twink quality. And he was young and he was fresh. And he seemed very innocent and very earnest. I think the earnestness is the thing. But I kind of got turned off with him because after a while, you're like, you know he's gay. And
but it was like that. I mean, that's the biggest shock since Liberace.
I think Who never came out.
I think, well,
I actually sued a British tabloid and won.
Yeah, well, you know, that's
for defamation.
Because of Clay coming out, thousands of Americans are sitting around diners going, you know, God, who's next? You never know these days.
I could be gay.
I wonder how many kids have come out because of Clay.
Well, I don't think it's a situation that, you know, seeing a celebrity is going to make anybody, like, act differently, but it's going to embolden them to feel more confident. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, Clay Aiken, the world didn't end for Clay Aiken. Mm-hmm. In fact, he's doing better now than he ever's been.
Well, I think Lindsay Lohan was actually going to help more people because people didn't know. I think that coming out has got to be the surprise element where it makes people think a little bit more. And I think, you know, how many guys wanted to have a good time with Lindsay and all of a sudden like, she's really hot and all of a sudden like, oh my God, she's a lesbian.
But straight guys fetishize lesbians.
Yes, they
especially
do.
Pretty ones.
But one thing that gay rights activists sometimes forget, Andy, is that straight women fetishize gay men the way straight men fetishize lesbians.
They do, because women
sexually.
Yes. I think it's like 90% of women that read that slash fiction, which is, yeah. For those of you who don't know, slash fiction is when they, it's a fiction where they pair up, like, let's say Captain Kirk having a love affair with Spock. Like, most of the people that read that are straight women. They love gay sex.
Well, and
sex.
They're always complaining about the gay men or the cute ones.
They are.
But it's not so much of a complaint. It's more like they want to, like, sort of get in there.
Well, it's the thing you can't have, though, too.
It's sex without consequences. Mm-hmm. I think part of it is that straight people look at gay, and mistakenly look at gay sexual relationships or lesbian sexual relationships as the fact that they're sort of free from the ramifications of marriage and having babies. And for I think what's happening is not so much that gay people are becoming more conservative, is that straight people are becoming much more like we are. That they're wanting to have the kind of relationships that we've been enjoying for decades.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course, now we're getting married, and I can thank conservatives because I would have been divorced like 3 times. They saved me a lot of money.
But people are getting married in a different way. I mean, how many people do I know that are, you know, are gay, have gotten married, but have structured their relationships very differently than your white picket fence types? I mean, I don't think that just because people get married that they got to buy into a lot of the BS that we see in straight relationships. Relationships, but they might want to be able to get their spouse's health insurance or whatever.
Well, Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie refuse to get married because gays cannot get married.
And they're
That's
both
what they
gay.
Say.
Well, they can afford it.
So until gays can get married, they can get married. So is that a way of them saying we're queer? And you can be queer and still like be in a relationship with a woman. I mean, I think that whole ex-gay thing is like it's sort of forcing bisexual people to choose one or the other.
No, you know? Most of the very few bisexuals are you ever
get involved
run across
the next gay
because
thing.
These are people who believe they're going to hell. They're sold this lie they're going to go to hell, and once they believe that, if they could have any attraction to the opposite sex whatsoever, they would yeah. do that because of their fear. What we see is people who have no attraction to the opposite sex who are tormented by mm-hmm. this. Yeah.
Well, and that's the really sad thing is that rather than pointing to homophobia and the negative feelings that people have about their own sexuality and whatever abuse they've gotten for being gay, they instead turn the whole problem on its head, so to speak, and actually point to embrace the homophobia that's been tormenting them.
And that's the last word. We want to thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Andy Thayer and Wayne Besson. Check them out this Saturday at corner of Halsted and Roscoe in Chicago for the Matthew Shepard March for LGBT Freedom. Although I think it should be called GLBT Freedom.
What time does it start?
8 p.m. Halsted and Roscoe. Be there. Check out our website, gayliberation.net or dumpdobson.com.
There you go. So stop Dobson. Dumpdobson.com, people.
Truth wins out. .org.
.org.
There's a lot of websites. You can follow all those websites through ours, feastoffools.net. Comment on this show. Should Obama be our next president? Is he going to sell us out? Do we want somebody more conservative to sort of inspire gay and lesbian people to fight for their rights?
We can't do the show without your support, so please visit our website, feastoffools.net. Make a donation, buy a t-shirt, get a mug.
Your financial contributions make the show possible. And remember that you can follow this conversation on our site or on our community forums. That's feastoffools.net/community. The music featured on today's show is the music of Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings. The song you're hearing in the background is called The Dap Dip.
Ooh.
Available, of course, through our website, feastoffools.net. Support Fierce Divas. Thank you guys so much
for
coming.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Big hugs and kisses to everyone. Mwah. Mwah.